No, we won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground.
No. Good morning and welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show, where we the people are now in session. We have a great show coming up for you today. In the first hour, we'll have Yuri Rashkin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup to talk about the weekly news. Then I'll have Jeff Simpson, he's a blogger from Blogging Blue, to talk about verifying the people, verifying the recall. He wrote a really good blog about it. We'll be discussing that, among other things. In the second hour, we'll start off with Melissa Balda from the DPW. I'm sure some people know what I'm talking about. It's the party, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, to talk about Walkergate, otherwise known as the John Doe investigation. Sam Liebert will be on to talk about his candidacy for the 44th Assembly District. And I will finish off the second hour with Julie Wells, who will be talking about harnessing the recall movement, Wellstone, and her candidacy for the Jefferson County Board. The phone number to call in is 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. We also have a live discussion online at blogtalkradio.com, where you can post your comments or questions. Now, I have two quick announcements. The first quick announcement is I've heard of a new movement that's coming. It's going to harness the power of the recalls to gain progressives the cohesive statewide power and voice that is so desperately needed. And the organization, from my understanding, is going to truly be ground up. In fact, the concept is so new that it will be the first organization of its kind pretty much ever. So keep checking. You could go to www.wisconsinmovement.com for developments. And their motto is, your agenda is our agenda. So that's kind of interesting coming up here, so watch out for that. And also, I'm very excited to announce that the Sarah Schultz Show can now be heard on Sundays on WFAQ 92.9 LPFM in Mukwonago, Waukesha. So if you're up in that area, please tune in. I believe it's going to be 10 o'clock a.m., but the time still hasn't really been set yet. But tune in on Sundays, and you will find out, and you'll be able to hear me up in Waukesha, Mukwonago. Now I'd like to welcome Yuri Rashkin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup to the show. Good morning, Yuri. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I am phenomenal.
That is good to hear. I was just listening to all the exciting things that are happening, and you're spreading to more stations. Good news, good news.
It is, and we're spreading up to Waukesha, Mukwonago. That's exciting. You know, that's Kathy Nicholas's area, and apparently a pretty strong red.
Somebody I know called Waukesha, Waukesha.
Yeah. That's about right. That's about right. So we need some voices up there.
That's right. Yours would be a powerful one. So we've got some news here happening this morning. So guess what? Remember that balanced budget that Governor Walker has balanced, and everything is so balanced and balanced now? Well, guess what? Apparently, he is now $143 million short of balancing it by July of 2013. So, a reasonable person will try to think of the way in which Governor Walker may try to damage our state further by cutting something, or where is this money going to come from? Is this going to come from Wisconsin retirement system? Is it going to come from some kind of, from firefighters, police officers? Where is it going to come from? Well, right away it comes out that Wisconsin will get $140 million from the federal mortgage settlement that was just announced yesterday. And the plan apparently already is to use that $140 million to cover Walker budget hole. So things line up really fast.
Well, I was going to say, instead of using it to maybe help the people who are falling on their mortgages and to help people stay in their homes, which might be a little better way of using that money?
Exactly. Using the money for what it was intended for. What a concept. That is the last thing that they're going to probably use it for, because the first thing they're going to do it for is to try to cover up their mistakes, because they didn't calculate the fact that with all the jobs they're going to lose, they're not going to collect as much taxes as they thought.
And the economy is going to slow down because people are out of work and don't have income to spend. And the people that had the income to spend, they cut that out of their jobs. So, yeah, so all of a sudden the economy is really slowing down because the people who had it don't have it anymore.
And, of course, it is slowing down in Wisconsin while in the rest of the country it is revving up. Of course,
yeah.
We're counting on Governor to bring in lots of out-of-state spending via his recall efforts and to prop up at least the TV stations and newspapers with his spending on the recall, or fighting the recall. So we have Republican lawmakers who work behind closed doors to draft redistricting legislation this summer. We have court documents that show that nearly all of Wisconsin Republican legislators signed legal agreements promising not to discuss new redistricting maps while they were being developed. This, thank goodness for Latino advocacy group Voces de la Frontera, that has filed a federal lawsuit alleging that redistricting maps are unconstitutional. So we're going to see where all of this goes, but we have Mike Ellis, who has been in the Senate for 40 years, a Republican, who says that he never had to sign on one of these before. And you figure if he's been there for 40 years and redistricting happens every 10, he's seen it, what, 3-4 times?
He should have anyway. Hopefully he... I'm assuming he would remember if he had signed something like that.
Ooh, I would hope so.
But the interesting thing about that is Neil Kedzie, he's my senator, so I know about this one. Neil Kedzie told a constituent twice that he did not sign anything. And then it comes out. And yes, he did. And so now he had to write back to constituent going, well, his office, anyway, I don't know if he personally said it, but his office said it, saying, well, maybe he did sign something. So that's
maybe this is like one of those Ron Paul newsletters that he didn't sign.
You know, it's pretty amazing. And maybe my office staff signed it. I don't remember signing it. It's pretty amazing that he could flat out, or his office would flat out lie to a constituent who asked him that.
There's something interesting there, because you got to wonder, did he know he signed it? Was he paying attention? You know, you would think that these guys have been in office long enough to know not to say things that are so patently not true and so easily verifiable. Here they go, saying things that just don't add up.
And the other interesting thing is the reasoning they gave for signing that non-disclosure was because they knew it was going to go into a lawsuit. Which is a whole other discussion. If you're putting something into law that you know is going to be in a lawsuit right away, maybe you should reconsider what you're doing. But getting back to that argument, they knew that the Act 10 with the collective bargaining was also going to go into a lawsuit, yet no one signed a non-disclosure act on that. There was the ID, the voter ID, they also knew was going to go into a lawsuit. No one signed anything on that, but yet they signed it on the redistricting, which was only done by two staffers who also work for lawmakers, did it out of the lawmaker's office, and I believe one of the staffers was Scott Fitzgerald's staffer.
Well, and I am no attorney here, but I'm trying to figure out, if you have a law firm, Michael Best and Friedrich, that seems to be the official GOP law firm of the state of Wisconsin, if they advise them to engage in behavior that's patently... well, going to result in lawsuit, at least, are they just creating more work for themselves? Because then they will be dealing with handling the lawsuit.
Yeah, maybe they figure they're perpetually keeping themselves in work. Maybe these are the jobs that Walker's talking about.
There you go. More attorneys.
More attorneys. We are keeping all the attorneys busy in Wisconsin right now.
Right, and I'm sure there's probably some requirements, frankly, where they couldn't be working on the own lawsuits that they're involved in, so that means that there's going to be another law firm and more attorneys.
Very true.
All right. So we've got the attorneys covered pretty well. But we should mention that we have a legislator who, in the meantime, brings gun to the floor of the assembly and says that even though he's hoping to never shoot at anything but a paper target, he still considers it's a good idea to bring a gun with him to the assembly floor.
And that is Bill Cramer. And Representative Cramer is also the acting pro tem speaker of the assembly, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
So he's the one standing.
Waukesha.
Where we go. Waukesha there. He's usually the one that's standing up there doing it. I don't really see Jeff Fitzgerald standing up much. He kind of sits in the background or lurks around or disappears. He just kind of walks off altogether. So Representative Cramer has a really good shot because he's standing high above everyone. He's kind of looking down. He could come, you know, good angles there.
Is this like kind of storming the beach in Normandy where, you know, you have the physicians, everything. My goodness. So just to cut back to the redistricting, there's one little tidbit that emerged out of court documents that really, I think, deserves its own special little bit of coverage, which is a list of talking points that said, in part, public comments on this map may be different than what you hear in this room. Ignore the public comment. That is, to me, as somebody who is looking at a career in public service, that is such a no-no. Because this is what it's all about. You listen to the public comments. Otherwise, what are you doing it for? So I think that this is just so telling and so indicative of the kind of poisonous environment that we find ourselves living in, where our lawmakers are being told, ignore the public comment.
That's pretty amazing considering it's the public that pays for their salary.
Mm-hmm.
It's the $18,000 per diem that the public's paying for Scott Fitzgerald to not drive home every night. So it'd be nice if he actually went by and listened to what the people actually said instead of listening to the lawyers and the people who are lining their pockets.
Mm-hmm. So just, just one of those things that makes your blood boil. Moving on, we have Republican State Representative Robin Voss declined comment on Wednesday, citing pending legislation. All right, so we have four Republican Wisconsin state senators who are facing possible recall elections, of course, with, the headliner there, Governor Scott Walker. And they now officially challenged the petitions on Thursday. Senator Scott Fitzgerald, one of the four state senators, said that he's challenging more than 4,300 signatures collected, saying organizers have submitted a wide range of irregularities, errors, and outright falsehoods to Wisconsin Government Accountability Board. This is going to be one of the most fun things to watch because it seems like whenever camera or microphone pointed at Senator Fitzgerald, he makes it all worthwhile by saying things that you can't believe somebody in his position would ever think appropriate to say.
Kind of like being on Fox and saying that it's all about busting the unions and not getting Obama reelected versus trying to save the state money.
Precisely. Precisely. All petitions submitted have been available to the public on GAB website, and that's something that is a major issue in the state of Wisconsin for anybody because so many people sign petitions, and now just one website, kind of citing an example, there's a right-wing media watching website, I believe it's called mediatrackers.org, and they found that an editor of a local newspaper in Fort Atkinson signed a recall petition for Senator Fitzgerald, and since those petitions are now online, we have this editor who, as a citizen, I believe has a right to sign any petition he chooses to, now is being criticized and attacked for taking a stand as a citizen. So, and this is just, to me, the most visible example. We're going to see this over and over. This is voter intimidation. This is going to further intimidate voters, media professionals. The downside of this idea of putting all the petitions online, I don't understand who this helps.
You know,
well,
I'm not...
How this helps people. I know how this helps Fitzgerald.
I was going to say, it helps the Republicans and the Tea Party a lot. I do know it's public record. The signatures are public record, but I don't think that the GAB is doing anyone any favors with all the intimidation going on. And I understand they're trying to be transparent, and I get that, but, this kind of intimidation and suppression has been something they've done the entire time this is going on. Since Walker's been in power, if you haven't agreed with him, then you're getting followed. You're getting honked at. You're getting flipped off. You're getting yelled at. Your cars are getting keyed. Your tires are being let out. Air is being let out of the tires. It's this progression up to the point of someone pretending to try to back up over a cop to the flip-off-a-thons to, you name it. It's just getting worse and worse as this continues. So putting these online is just kind of allowing these people to continue, and now you see where some of the people live and you have names. And, there's Facebook pages saying that what's the one Facebook page, I don't know if it's been shut down, about how they're going to fire people who signed the Walker petition. And
yeah,
it's just absolutely disgusting. And this is what Walker's done. Walker is not good for Wisconsin because Walker doesn't get Wisconsin.
Well,
this is not Wisconsin way.
As somebody, I think, wisely pointed out to me, this is not about what Wisconsin is doing for the people of Wisconsin. It's about what Walker is doing to the people of Wisconsin.
Exactly. This is not the Wisconsin way. He just doesn't get Wisconsin. I don't know what game book. I don't know if it's an Illinois game book. I don't know what he's doing. But
I suppose this makes sense that now he's engaged in all sorts of fundraisers all across the nation, because it's not about Wisconsin. It's about pursuing a national radical right-wing agenda. And so he exists and functions on support of those groups and those individuals.
It's all about Walker. It's all about Walker and the people who pay him. That's who it's been. It's been like that the entire time. The bills he's written are for the people that support him. The money he gets goes to other things, and he puts people in power for the people who support him. He doesn't care about anyone else. He cares about the people who donate to him. He cares about Walker. He cares about moving forward and getting out of Wisconsin into a higher office. That's what he cares about.
Well, I think we've seen this clearly over the 8 years of George W. Bush, where loyalty was placed and valued far above competency. And this is the same approach, because when you propose policies that are misguided at the very least, at this point, you have to rely on people who are loyal to you versus know something about the issue, because they're not going to support the policy or at least ask questions, and you don't want that. I mean, obviously, what we see over and over, it's about marching in lockstep by everybody signing the non-disclosure form, everybody voting for this, everybody voting for that. This is how they function. So loyalty is really, really paramount. Which I guess makes the presidential election all that much more fun to watch there on the Republican side. Because you see that idea kind of falling apart in Reagan's 11th Amendment going to, you know, in a handbasket. So
I just want to remind people we're talking with Uri Raskin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. And if you have any questions for Uri, you can call in at 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. And we're talking about the news stories of the week. Well, what else do you have for us, Uri?
What else do we have? Well, I suppose we should mention that there's a data shop of Janesville that got $75,000 to enter the names. So you see, this Walker recall and the Walker policies are creating jobs and spending money in local economy. So we have another state senator who entered the race. We have Kathleen Weinhaus, state senator from Alma, who officially announced that she was in the race for governor. But wouldn't you know it, the Wisconsin Education Association Council, WEAC, announced its recommendation of Kathleen Falk to represent Democrats against Scott Walker. The announcement has met with a strong backlash from WEAC members and social media sites, including a petition on change.org to reconsider the recommendation of Kathleen Falk. Going back to the poll that we conducted at Defend Wisconsin News Roundup, Kathleen Falk is not the most popular candidate among the grassroots activists, who are the ones really engaged in reading all the information and sharing all the information. Those are the people that are out there collecting signatures for the recall and everything. So I find it a little concerning, very concerning, that we have organizations that are already and unions that hopefully just a small number that think that it's a good idea to get in the middle of this organic event of people standing up to the governor and try to place those candidates that they believe to be the best right at the forefront, right in the beginning. This is what we have democracy for. We have primaries, and I think that creating this kind of playing favorites is potentially harmful for the entire recall effort.
Yeah, I've heard good and bad about it. I know that a lot of people have spoken up saying this is way too early, this is way too early for anyone to be endorsed, because there's one person, we don't have the full candidates out yet. But I've also heard that having WEAC up there with Falk that it makes her a bigger target. That a lot of the Republican talking points are Madison, Milwaukee is pushing the state, and the unions are in charge of this. And by someone coming from Madison who is now backed by a union, it kind of just proves the talking point. So there's two aspects. And then there's people who absolutely love her. There's people who think this is great, and there's people who totally support this, and they think she's the best thing to happen to Wisconsin.
Well, and should she win the primary, there's no question that people are going to fight hard for her and in order to get recall done and get Walker out of there, because no matter who the Democrat is, Walker is going to be 100 times worse. And I think everyone agrees on that. The only question is, does this person have a chance of winning the support of people in the primary and then winning the support of population, you know, over 50% of population in general in order to win the election? Because this is what democracy is all about. It's always a contest. It's not just about getting this person out of there. It's about replacing them with somebody, you know, in order to shift those votes, because Walker has won election, and he, you know, obviously he was misleading people, but he is a fairly talented demagogue who will speak and say things that people want to hear in a way that is soothing, and he'll spend millions of dollars, already is, on advertising. So we got to have a good candidate who is backed by an energized, you know, by voters who are energized. So, and this happens when you have a good, healthy democratic process of selecting that candidate. So I think that we're having a good discussion, but I just am glad that we're going to have a primary and we got to get through it.
I think a primary is going to be very good. I think having a primary, like you said, it's going to allow the people to really speak and say who we want to run against Walker. And I know a lot of people have said, oh, you can, as Chris Liebensalt said, you can run a rotten potato and Walker would lose. And I don't agree with that. I think his messaging is very good. I think that he's got $12 million plus from mostly out of state. I think he's got a lot of support from big donors out of the state, a couple big donors in the state, but mostly out of the state. And I think that he's able to do messaging and get people to really, whether he's right or not, to fall into line with him. So I think we really have to be careful on who we send out there, and I think we have to work on how we put them out there and how we can support them. And so I think
absolutely
the primary is going to be good for that.
Because I think that the rotten potato idea, I think a can of beer, rotten potato, whatever that item you put up, is going to get an X number of votes, a guarantee. That it's probably going to get, I don't know, 35-40%. But in the end, you got to have more than 50%, and that's where you got to have a good candidate. I think messaging is going to be important, but we also shouldn't, you know, because we, and not just the left, but the right also, tend to listen to those that we agree with. We create this universe in which we feel that everyone agrees with us, or at least all the reasonable people that we talk to and listen to agree with us. But reality is that the state continues to be split 50-50, because more education needs to be done to show people what Walker policies are doing. But in the meantime, the poll that we did on Defend Wisconsin News Roundup actually has more than doubled the number of responses I rejected this morning, because it's been a couple of weeks. I thought, well, you know, it seems like nobody's voting. Well, let's see what's going on before I go on the Sarah Schultz show. Guess what? The number of votes went from 430 to over 930, and Scott Walker is now leading his own recall candidacy, because the word got spread by trolls throughout their Under the Bridge channels, and they went on there and they voted to support Scott Walker. So we have to be vigilant.
And we can't let we can't stand divided. Right now we can, it's a primary, but the minute we have a candidate, like him or hate him, whoever they are, they're better than Scott Walker.
Him or her, that's right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who they are. Just him, her, it, whatever is out there. Whoever gets the nod, that's who we need to really put our support behind and push. Because that's
right.
The
and
way
just,
we're going to
you know,
get them in.
And just this week, we also saw State Senator Tim Collin that pulled out of the race and citing an ability to raise the funds needed. But I think he also was already aware that WEAC was going to come out in support of Kathleen Fault. I think we're going to have some potentially good candidates who are going to be, this is part of the reason for this early endorsement, is try to push others who may not have declared yet out of even thinking about it. So I think that there are some other reasons that an early endorsement does that is harmful, and not just because it points at a certain candidate, but it also takes away opportunities from other voices. Money is so important. You know, I'm looking at my own race here where we have, I raised $1,500 to get elected and reelected to the city council. And now, in order to represent a slightly smaller area than the city of Janesville, I have to raise between 10 and 100 times the amount that I raised for city council. So when you have huge union groups that do contribute a lot to Democratic politicians, say, you know what, we're going to take all of our support and we're going to put it towards this candidate, that means that there's that much less money for somebody else. So I think that staying out of endorsements in before the primaries occur is also probably a healthier thing, because it allows the candidates to kind of develop their message and to show to the voters what they're about. I think this is, I just keep coming back to the healthy aspect of a healthy competition.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So,
you going to have a fun show?
always. So I always love doing the show. It's always fun. So what do you see coming down the pike for next week? Do you see anything coming up? I know we still have the mining bill. Assembly passed it. The Senate's still hanging on to it. Nothing's written yet. I don't even know when the next assembly meeting is. They tend to only work once or twice a month, because apparently Jeff Fitzgerald and I don't know about maybe Scott Fitzgerald's too busy with his recall, but Jeff Fitzgerald's too busy with his U.S. Congress campaign, so he can't really do his job.
Well, officially they announced that they are just too busy with the recalls, and it's all these people trying to recall them that are causing all these problems and not letting the assembly do its work. And even if that were the true, I think we already are accomplishing some good things by just slowing down this assembly and the Senate. But at the same time, they're also running into problems, because it sounds like the Senate is not passing any of the assembly bills, because the majority in the Senate is in such peril. So I think we're already, just the recalls that occurred in August are already doing what they were supposed to do, and they're slowing down this machine. So in a way, not much happens for a while. That may be a good thing for Wisconsin, but we can count on Governor Scott Walker to do some things that are going to continue to hurt the state. We haven't seen the latest unemployment numbers. Hopefully, for everybody's sake, they get better. But when you have misguided policies, it's hard to expect good things. And he has to plug that hole. He's got to find some way to plug that budget hole. And for him, that's always another excuse to create a crisis and to come up with another way to attack the state of Wisconsin. I think that the issue of Wisconsin retirement systems is going to be something that's going to probably increase in prominence, if anything, because this is one of those things that unions were standing in the way of. And now with collective bargaining out of the way, who knows, what's going to stop Republicans besides people of Wisconsin from taking the system that was working well and try to muck with it. So we'll keep our eyes on it. We'll keep talking about it. And the best thing is just to get the word out, like what you're doing, like what we're doing, you know, just get people educated and let everybody know, so that when something goes down, everybody knows and we can all speak up and stand up.
And we have to. We got to remain. Focused, and we have to make sure they don't push anything else through. There's bills out there already, and we can talk next week about the retirement system, because boy, is that he's trying to sneak that one in, and that's just one more thing to support and help out the people who are greasing his palms. So.
It's kind of interesting because people will say that I can't believe they sunk even lower. Well, there is no bottom. They're just going to keep sinking until we stop them. So,
they're
going to
keep digging.
Yeah. Exactly. They're going to keep sinking, all of us with them.
Yep.
Please say hi. I hear you're going to have my friend Sam Liebert on your show. So tell him hello, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds great. You have a great week, Yuri. Thanks for being on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, you too. Bye. That was Yuri Raskin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Up next, we'll have Jeff Simpson with Blogging Blue, and we'll talk about verifying the recalls. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO says Thursday's announcement of an attorney's general settlement with banks on fraudulent mortgage and foreclosure practices is a step towards addressing the housing and foreclosure crisis that still plagues us. The $25 billion settlement provided some compensation for foreclosure victims and homeowners who are underwater on mortgages without requiring individuals to waive their legal claims. The AFL-CIO applauded Attorneys General Eric Schneiderman, Kamala Harris, and others who the Labor Federation says fought to improve the terms of the settlement. It's their efforts, the AFL-CIO says, that made sure banks have not been released from their liability for fraud and other illegal conduct involving mortgage-backed securities that were central to the Wall Street financial meltdown. The AFL-CIO is urging President Obama to, quote, provide the Federal Investigative Task Force with the resources necessary to address the $750 billion in negative home equity that is the result of illegal conduct by banks, end quote. Two Wisconsin Democratic state lawmakers Thursday introduced a resolution in the Wisconsin legislature calling for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to overturn the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. State Representatives Mark Pocan and Chris Taylor introduced the resolution. Pocan says corporations aren't people and they shouldn't be given the constitutional right to buy elections. Pocan says this is the people's government, not the corporation's government, and corporations should not have the right to usurp the individual's right to free speech. Wisconsin State Representative Taylor says that corporations should not have the same free speech rights that people do. The resolution is part of a national movement to overturn the Money is Speech Citizens United decision. The effort is associated with Move to Amend. Over 1,800 Allstate insurance agents took a survey done by the OPEIU-affiliated National Association of Professional Allstate Agents Incorporated to measure the agent's satisfaction with the giant insurer. Allstate fared very poorly in the NAPAA survey, which used a model similar to Allstate's own customer satisfaction surveys. The company scored less than zero, with a higher percentage of agents ranking the company with negative answers in all categories than those who ranked it positive in every category. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. Workers Independent News is produced and provided by Diversified Media Enterprises, made possible in part by the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz on now is Jeff Simpson. He is a blogger with the website Blogging Blue. Good morning, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you, Sarah?
I am doing great. Thank you. It's actually snowing. Winter is back. I like snow. So we haven't had a lot of it. You know, usually by this time I'm tired of snow. We've had so little. I'm like, wow, snow. Yay.
Exactly.
So it's kind of fun. But you have a great blog about the people verifying the recall. And in it, you talk about the Tea Party and their involvement with this. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Sure. It was frustrating to me to see the media perpetually showing these guys on TV saying, we just want a fair election, we just want a fair election, that's all we want, we're nonpartisan. And it's just not true. And they have a long history of the fact that it is not true, especially the people involved. So I thought somebody better kind of point that out to people, and I don't know. Hopefully it did a little bit, but unfortunately the mainstream media didn't do any of that. So,
well, does the mainstream media ever do anything like that?
Not very often, no. Unless you're Dan Bice, but everybody else is kind of sits back and does what they're told, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, so that was very frustrating to me. And then when I heard Larry Gamble was involved, and then I really decided I needed to sit down and write something up. So,
now, who is Larry Gamble?
Larry Gamble is somebody who actually, the first way I found him was I actually also blog on forwardlookout.com. And one of my friends there, Matt Logan, did a open records request to find out who was doing an open records request on the teachers that missed for the protest. So I thought, that's a pretty good idea. Let me do it in my district of Monona Grove. And there's Larry Gamble's name again. I'm like, who is this guy? So I found out he lives in Milwaukee. And so I emailed him a bunch of times saying, you know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? What's your point? And he never, ever, ever responded. And finally, I emailed him enough. He just sent me back one time. I was just curious. Now, here's a guy who can't get on TV enough, but doesn't want to answer any questions about his past or what he's doing. So I'm like, I thought, so. And then I realized that he was also part of the Grand Sons of Liberty, and then I knew that they had absolutely no intention of just wanting a fair election.
And the Grand Sons of Liberty is a Tea Party group that's out of the Milwaukee area then, or out of, where are they out of?
I believe they're out of Milwaukee. You know, they're so spread out, and now there's so few of them that it's kind of hard to tell exactly where they're from, but I believe they're out of Milwaukee. They were the ones that won Wisconsin Now, I believe a year ago or so, had an actual recording of them discussing voter caging in some of the poorest districts in Milwaukee. And unfortunately, at the time, they were also working with Americans for Prosperity and Rents Priebus. So they obviously didn't care about, all they care about is getting far-right Republicans elected. They don't care about a free election.
So basically, these are just another GOP operative.
I think they're even worse than that, actually. I mean, I think unfortunately, the far-right has an overdue influence on the amount of people that there actually are out there that agree with them. So I think they're farther right than the majority of Republicans in the state, yes.
If you have any questions for Jeff Simpson, you can call in at 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896.
Because I think, honestly, if you talk to your friends, and I have a lot of friends that are Republicans, they are not far-right Tea Party people. They're fairly sane, normal Republicans. Unfortunately, I think the money goes to the far-right Tea Party people because it benefits the people that have the money to go as far right as they can, and then the center keeps moving right and right and right for them. So I wouldn't say that they were part of the Republican Party. I would say they were the extreme of the Republican Party.
The neocons hanging
exactly.
out with the Republicans.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I actually feel sad. I feel sorry for some of the moderates. Like, if I were a moderate GOP person, I'd be looking around going, what happened to my party?
Right, right. They can't really speak up even anymore because, I mean, how many moderates are even in the elected? One,
well,
two?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
And then you can't tell because they're so afraid to say anything because my understanding is they're strong-armed into passing a lot of this legislature because they're being told you don't pass it, we'll run someone who might.
Right. Well, they ran the budget they ran through when Dale Schultz was not available? Or was it Act 10? It was one of those they ran through with Dale Schultz.
It was Act 10. Act 10. Dale Schultz was, he was trying, I believe the story is he was somewhere else and then he found out that they were ramming it through. He ran back into and then it was already done.
Right,
and
right.
That was the act where they honestly left the voting open for about 10 seconds.
Right. So for him to continue going on, obviously there's some very strong pressure. I mean, like, you know, if all your best friends at work did that to you, how would you feel? I mean, would you continue to support them 100%? I don't think I would. So,
yeah.
But yeah, moderates aren't very welcome in the party nowadays. So.
And it's too bad because it's their voice that really helped make Wisconsin what it is, not the Tea Party people.
Absolutely. But the one thing I want to say, I mean, I guess the one thing that got me was how Larry Gambell and just a few people just have really attacked the teachers who took days off those days. And that's kind of been sticking with me for a long time. And so that's why when I saw him involved in this, I really wanted to make sure everybody knew who Larry Gambell was. And Larry Gambell is not looking out for your vote. Larry Gambell is looking out for Larry Gambell.
I was going to say, the fact that he's sitting there looking at all the recall, the signatures, and the fact that he's saying we have people in 50 states, why do you need people in 50 states? Seriously?
Right.
Why? I mean, Hawaii, really? We have some person in Hawaii looking at Wisconsin signatures like they care.
Right. And it's funny that these guys are supposedly smaller government, yet they want to put databases of names and addresses of everybody who signed on the internet via the government. It's just like they want more and more and more lists, but yet they tell you, they'll sit and tell you they want privacy, they want to be left alone, but they continue to do more and more of this stuff. So
I would like to know their definition of small government, because I think our definition of small government and their definition of small government are two different definitions.
Absolutely. I mean, they've never done anything that I know of to make government smaller. I mean, I think as progressives, I think we also want smaller government in certain areas. So I think it's just a matter of definition. I mean, I think the Patriot Act was the biggest government act they probably could possibly make, and yet they're adamant that they supported that for the most part. So.
Right. It's okay to have small government when it talks about guns and gun rights, but it's okay to have big government when it talks about who you can marry, reproductive rights. So I guess they get to pick and choose what rights they like to support and what rights.
Exactly. I mean, even going back to the little things like seatbelt laws were all passed by Republicans. I mean, just little things like that. They want to tell you exactly how to live, but just don't tell them how to live. It's kind of how it boils down to, unfortunately.
And they want to get rid of what they call entitlements, which is, you know, Social Security, which helps people live after they can retire, and Medicare, Medicaid. They want to get rid of them unless they're on it. Then they don't want you to touch it.
It's funny because entitlement, like, you're entitled to Social Security because you've paid into it your whole life. So technically it is an entitlement program, but it's your money that you're getting back in the long run. So it's
right.
So hopefully Paul Ryan pays the price this year for that.
We're trying. Really,
yes.
We're trying.
Yes.
I'm in his district. We're trying. We really are. They're, you know, these guys are just political bullies. I mean, you see it from them intimidating the people getting the recalls to the fact that they're intimidating people after the recalls to during everything about it, even before it, if you had a recall Walker bumper sticker on your car, they'd follow you and key your car get next to you and yell at you. These are documents. These are things people have told me. I'm not making this up. These are things that people have actually told me have occurred. And I hope that people went to the police and documented them, but these things have occurred.
I think a lot of people didn't. I think they just wanted to be able to just like shake it off and let it go. I think a lot of that happened.
Yeah.
So
I agree, and unfortunately, you can't do anything if there's nothing to set
but
it
we,
up.
On our blog, I have a Republican Thug series that was turned out to be quite a few different pieces of all different Republican violence, intimidation, acts, and stuff like that that we've kind of tried to keep chronicled. So if anybody wants to check that out, you can go to Blogging Blue and search Republican Thugs, and you'll see many, many stories.
Well, what do you think their version of democracy is?
You know, I don't know if they don't really like democracy. Their version of democracy appears to be where the adults will handle it. You guys just sit back and be quiet. That's what it appears to me.
They're very parent-like.
Yes. Yes, don't ask any questions. We know exactly what's right for everybody, and we will not be discussing it with the likes of you because you obviously don't know. So it's interesting that these guys modeled themselves after the founders supposedly, which they really didn't, but, and then their views on democracy and how things are. It just amazes me sometimes. So, I mean, the fact that they signed these secrecy agreements, anybody that said they were a Tea Party member and wanted to go back of the Jefferson, Paine, Madison, Franklin, Washington era should all be up in arms.
I agree. Going back to the Divergent Democracy, isn't that National Socialism?
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, it's been well documented. They like to socialize their risk and privatize the profits. So, I mean, how many more examples of that do we need?
That's very true. You know, just look at Wall Street. It's
right.
A free market. Oh, sorry, we screwed up. Can
right.
you give us money to help us out now?
Right. And just look at what's going on now with the mortgage settlement that they're negotiating. So, I mean, really, realistically, they should pay hundreds of billions of dollars to the U.S., but they're just going to pay a pittance of really what they owe.
Right.
So,
right. And
now, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it shouldn't just be the U.S. It should be all over the world. They
right,
caused
right.
the entire world depression.
Correct.
So.
Correct. Absolutely. And then now we see, I don't know if you saw yet, but that they're going to use part of that money to balance their budget that they're short on. So.
Yeah. We have a balanced budget. Oops, sorry, we really don't. But, hey, look, there's a settlement that we really should put towards the people who are losing their homes here in Wisconsin so we can keep them in their homes and help them to keep with the taxes and help them so they can get some sort of a little more spendable income so we can help boost our economy. But yet we're going to fill the hole that we kind of screwed up with.
Right. And then they're going to they need to fill up that hole so they can get back to campaigning on not raiding funds.
Yes.
So.
And on a balanced budget.
Yes, absolutely. And another thing, did you see that the four senators turned their recall complaints in? And there were, like, no fraud hardly whatsoever. Did you see that?
No, I knew they turned it in, but I hadn't seen what the result was.
Fitzgerald himself challenged only 205 duplicate signatures and one fake name.
Oh, so much for the fraud and thousands
right.
of people re-signing. And
what they're basing that on is the new districts. That's what they're basing the unwarranted signatures would be based on the new district.
But they can't use the new district.
They can't use the new district, but that's exactly what he's claiming all his fraud is on all people signed it that are not in his new district.
And
so,
yet they've already, yeah. This.
Yeah, which you didn't see in the press yet, but like Van Wamgaard is 137 duplicates, no fake names. Galloway had no fake names. And Moulton had no fake name. So there's one name that out of four senators challenged one fake name.
So basically they blame liberals for voter fraud, but they engage in election fraud.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And all the fraud that they've been complaining about for forever just isn't there. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you probably did see the video of Lori Compass that went to Scott Fitzgerald's town hall meeting and asked him to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out she was absolutely right because there was no Mickey Mouse, there was no Adolf Hitler, there was no fraud. She was correct, and he does owe her an apology.
Well, and I know that she was very good about looking at the signature. She was like signature Nazi. So it, the fact that he thinks there's one fraud name on there is pretty amazing.
Well, I think all of United Wisconsin was. I know in Madison I had to go back once because somebody checked town and village. So I had to go back and fix that.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
You know. So I knew there wasn't going to be any major problems.
Well, that's just, yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, the fact that these people can come up and say that, and it gets back to the media. I mean, it gets back to the fact that the media isn't calling them out on this. The media isn't doing their job.
Right.
You know, and no one seems to be holding the media accountable.
Right. And another thing, I didn't have time to research this, or I don't know if the efforts even to research it, but I just wondered how involved Larry Gamble was in recalling, was it Bob Wirch over there? Because there was massive fraud in the Democratic recalls last summer that they didn't seem to worry about at that point.
Yeah, well, that was what was pretty amazing. They had people who were, here's a free shot if you sign this recall petition. Here is... we were paying people from Colorado to come in and get signatures. They had Green Bay had a horrible time up there. I believe it was Hanson's, I recall. And they had a fake break-in, and they had these guys who were trying to sign people. They're getting paid for signature, and some of these guys had a felony record to them. And
well, they gave away shots for signatures. And then remember in the testimony afterwards, like at this point in the process, they tried to get some recall petitioners in to talk to them, but they couldn't find any of them. So it was bad. And to be fair, I don't think Wisconsin is set up to handle this kind of thing. You know, I don't think they were set up to handle, how do we verify 500,000 signatures? Like, I don't think they have a real process in place for that. So.
Well, and before we go on, I have to clarify, there was fraud in the Republican recall of the Democrats. This Republican recall of Wirtz, the Republican recall of Senator Dave Hansen. So that's where the fraud was found mostly, was, or I think all of it, was in the Republican recalls of the Democrats.
And like I said, to be fair, there really isn't a process. So I think the GAB was like, well, you have so many signatures, we don't have any way to figure this out, so let's just go ahead with the recall.
Well, they make the recall so difficult in Wisconsin that the fact that you needed a certain percentage in a short amount of time, I think they felt they were pretty safe. I didn't think they felt that they were going to be able, people were able to do it unless something major came up, and this was pretty major. But I don't, 540,000, was it 540,208 or something of that nature?
Right,
is a lot. But to get over 1.9 million, you know, there really wasn't anything. And then it doesn't help that the GAB, who was doing its job, gets sued by the Republicans in Waukesha
from
a bill that they pushed through, saying that instead of going to Dane County, where the government is, you could pick any place in the state to go to. So instead of going 10 minutes down the road to sue, they went an hour and 10 minutes down the road to sue. And the judge went against what the laws even said and said, GAB, you've got to not only look at the signatures and flag them, which was their job. Their job was to look at the signatures, flag them, and then give them to the Republican Party and say, hey, these are some signatures you might want to check out. And the Republican Party says, okay, we'll check them out. It does that in every race. It doesn't matter what race you run in. You do it in every race, from village all the way up to governor.
Right.
And that's what the unlimited money was for. The unlimited money was for the fact that they could pull people in to look at all these signatures and say, that's flag, that's flag, that's flag, let's check it out. But instead, they judge-shopped, went to Waukesha, got that passed. So now the unlimited money that they have raised goes to Walker and messaging, and they've made the state have to pay the bill of checking the signatures, which wasn't the GAB's job to begin with.
Right, exactly, which I believe, if I remember right, the Republicans won down the GAB when they first put it in.
So can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
That the Republicans watered down the GAB when they first created that, if I'm not mistaken. In terms of the Democrats wanted a stronger, more independent GAB, and the Republicans, I think, diminished kind of their responsibilities. But I'm not 100% positive on that, because that's a little bit before I really started blogging and paying attention, but I believe that's what happened.
Well, I know that the GAB was formed because of something that happened in the Doyle administration.
Right.
And it was formed by the Republicans. And now all of a sudden the Republicans are going, well, we really don't like the GAB. We'd rather go back to where it was.
Right. And another thing I think that needs to be said is, like, one of the bigger talking points I hear is we're going to have perpetual recalls. And I just don't think we're going to have perpetual recalls. It takes, 15,000 people to give 60 days of their life to go stand out in the cold and get signatures. And it's just, I don't see that happening on a regular basis.
Well, it really, and it hasn't. I mean, we've had a lot of people.
Right.
I know people weren't happy with Doyle at the end of his run, but no one felt the need. I think they tried to recall him and it didn't work.
Right.
So
they tried to recall Feingold and Cole also, and that didn't work. So
that didn't work.
And especially now, the Grandsons of Liberty, I think, have given us a good thing in the long run, that now if we're going to start looking at every signature that closely, then we're not going to be able to get away with stuff like they did in Green Bay anymore. So
Well, they're basically hurting themselves. I mean, it's funny, Jeff. It's not funny. It's sad. Funny in a sad way, I suppose. Jeff Fitzgerald comes out and says, we need to make it a felony to have people who sign twice on these petitions.
Right.
Well, the people who did most of the signing twice were his supporters.
Right.
So go ahead, make it a felony. Your supporters can no longer vote. And by the way, they can't get a job because you pushed through a bill that allows a felon to not get a job. It makes it harder for a felon to get a job. So now they don't have a job and they can't vote.
And off the topic a little bit, but one thing that really bothers me is there isn't any outrage over the John Doe investigation in terms of this is the perfect time to go in bipartisanly and really, really tighten these laws. And nobody's doing it.
I don't even know if people even know what the John Doe investigation is. That's another way the media has failed. Other than Mr. Bice, who's been phenomenal at writing it, it's been the bloggers, been Cognitive Dissonance, it's been you guys, the Blogging Blue. You know, the bloggers are keeping up with it, and Bice is keeping up with it, but it doesn't seem that anyone else is keeping up with it. And,
but I would like to see a unified Democratic Party come in with, okay, we're going to stop, you know, we're going to stop this from ever happening again with stronger penalties, more oversight, yada yada, you know, and push that bill through and let the Republicans vote against it.
That would be nice.
You know, if somebody is drunk driving for the fourth time and causes a major crash, they all run to the assembly floor and pass these huge drunk driving extra strong bills. Like we're at that moment for clean elections, clean government, and nobody's doing anything about it. So that kind of frustrates me.
Well, so far they've won on not having clean elections.
Right. But now they want to send somebody to prison for 3 years for signing a recall petition twice.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So.
Yeah,
the whole big picture is frustrating enough without, you know, the whole macro is frustrating, so is the micro, so I don't know where. So that's why we need these recalls to really be successful.
Well, we got to slow down this kind of turning out of these bills because they're not doing anything important. The bills that they're passing are, you know, we're naming what bicycles are. And yet the bills they need to pass, like job bills, aren't happening.
Right.
So now, do you have any last – we have to go actually about a minute here. Do you have any last words you want to say?
I don't know. Like I said, the whole macro picture is so big, and it's like every day. It's like there's something that is more frustrating than everything that happened yesterday. But I guess the big thing is we just need to – pay more attention. I think that's the one good thing that's happened out of this is people have actually started paying attention to their government.
All right. And where can people go to read your blogs?
Bloggingblue.com is where I spend most of my time, and I do a little bit of forwardlookout.com, but mostly Cottage Grove, Dane County stuff there. So.
Okay. And bloggingblue.com and forwardlookout.com?
Forwardlookout.com. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Oh, it was fun. We'll have to do it again.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
Right. Yeah, have a good day. Bye. That was Jeff Simpson with Blogging Blue and Forward Outlook there. Coming up next is Melissa Balda from the DPW. Talk about the John Doe investigation. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
You may win this war that's coming.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show. We are going to be speaking with, or we are speaking with, Melissa Baldoff from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. I'd like to welcome you to the Sarah Schultz Show this morning, Melissa.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for coming on. Now, what are some of the newest developments in the John Doe, or as some people call it, the Walkergate investigation right now?
Well, in Walkergate, the newest revelations here are that Scott Walker has retained some pretty, we're assuming, high-dollar counsel that are some kind of cleaners. You know, these are the people that come in and fix a problem for you. He's previously spent, you know, upwards of $60,000 on attorneys for the John Doe, and now that this is drawing closer and closer to him, and the people that have served in his inner circle are actually getting convicted of crimes, he's brought in two new attorneys to help him out here.
Now, didn't he go to the DA's office to do a little chat, or is that coming up?
Well, that's coming up. We don't know when that's going to be. That's one of his things he's really had conflicting statements on. At first it was he's never talked to them. He doesn't know what's going on. Then he's been in contact a little bit, and then he released a statement last week, you know, just a self-serving, posturing statement that he was voluntarily going in to talk to the DA to continue his cooperation when, in fact, he was requested to come in. So his definition of voluntarily seems to be a little bit different from most people's definition of voluntarily. So he has stated that he's turned over thousands and thousands of campaign emails, but they have not met yet to our knowledge.
Well, and that's what I heard, too. I heard that his thing is voluntary is kind of like one of those statements going, well, you can come in on your own or you can come up with a subpoena. So which one would you like to do it at?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like getting called in and going, well, you can get fired or you can resign. Which one would you like to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's
he's
exactly
done it.
It.
So this is just a giant PR thing for him then.
Yes. Well, when you're kind of backed into a wall, that's really your only move, right? You know, he has to say, I'm going to cooperate and I'm going to do this and I'm going to be offering all of my assistance. Well, he doesn't really have any other move. You know, he knows that this is getting closer and closer to him. You know, people that have served by his side for 20 years are going down for some very serious crimes. And, you know, it's making people really question if he's brought that same kind of, you know, corrupt culture to Madison. And I think a new development we're just learning of last night is that the top aides to the Fitzgerald brothers have been working out of a law office for months. So is that the secret network in Madison? We don't know. And there are so many questions that need to be answered about this kind of shadow government that's been set up, and, you know, the people deserve answers to those questions.
Well, and that with the Fitzgeralds, it was interesting because it was the two lawyers and the Fitzgerald brothers, basically, that did all the redistricting, and as we all know, that the Republicans all signed a non-disclosure
mm-hmm.
paper that said they couldn't talk about even with their constituents. So, this is kind of what you're seeing. I guess this is stuff that he did in Milwaukee. You're just seeing it played out on a bigger scale.
That's exactly it. It's just been a culture that he has perpetuated for years where things are kept secret, they're kept from the public, all of these acts are done in the dark, and that's just not in line with our traditions and our values in Wisconsin. We've always been renowned for having open and clean and transparent government, and Walker himself vowed to run the most transparent administration in history before he took office. So this just, the things that we're seeing coming out now and comparing them to the bad acts of his past in Milwaukee County, we know that that's just not the case. He's not running any kind of open government. It's all shadowy.
And that's what you found in Milwaukee, because you had that secret modem put in his office, and you had the point where people were using a second system, but only his people were using a second system
right.
to communicate. So there, if you had a any kind of a Freedom of Information Act request out there, you really wouldn't find any information because they were using a secret modem.
Yes, and that's very disturbing on both levels, that they're using this secret network to conduct illegal campaign activity, of which Scott Walker was the primary beneficiary. I mean, this was clearly part of a plan to see Walker put into the governor's office. And the other part of that is that they are conducting the county's business, the taxpayers' business, on this network. And we know from the criminal complaints that have already been filed that county business was conducted on this secret network. We don't know what it was, which is disturbing because the people should know what their elected officials are doing in office. And it's disturbing because we don't know if Scott Walker was on that email network. One would think he was if his chief of staff and his deputy chief of staff are all communicating on this. So that's something that remains to be seen, whether or not Scott Walker himself was sending and receiving emails on that network.
Well, it's interesting that the modem itself was put, if you see the diagram of how the offices were laid out, the modem itself was put right in the middle office in between its walker and then an office and then the modem and then an office and an office. And everyone else that's in that diagram has been indicted. The only one that hasn't is Walker.
Right. I mean, and this, if you look at that map too, like you said, it's a great visual of this. I mean, this is happening 25 feet away from where Scott Walker was sitting. I mean, it is just not at all believable for him to say that he has no idea this was going on. And so, I mean, really his best defense is, you know, oh, I was too incompetent to know what my employees were doing. When that's your best defense, that's not any better. So, you know, he obviously wasn't taking steps to find out what his people were doing if he's innocent of this, if he's to be believed, which really is not believable. The logical explanation is that he was aware of what was going on.
Well, it seems to be his personality to know what's going on. But either way, either incompetent or just a complete crook, either way, that's someone you don't want running your government and you don't want
exactly.
him as governor. So now the many Fitzwalker supporters feel that they're justified because of what Doyle had done. Now, how is Walker and what he's doing different from the Doyle administration and what they did?
Well, what happened in the Doyle administration, this was an underling who Doyle hadn't even met, you know, was accused under trumped-up corruption charges. And, you know, Scott Walker was very, very quick to judge that, and he demanded that Doyle be removed from office. And this was somebody that was not a direct report to Doyle. This was not in his inner circle like Scott Walker's campaign staff and his chief of staff. And his statement then was that the Doyle administration was damaged and must be removed from the Capitol to give the people of Wisconsin a chance to clean up government. I mean, he was demanding Doyle's ouster for the crimes of some alleged crimes of someone who wasn't even in his office.
Now, there's been some question on who John Doe is. No one knows who John Doe is because that's the nature of the John Doe is a secret investigation. But Rince Priebus has been connected with this. Is there a question whether that maybe, and I don't know if you can answer or not, obviously, because this is all speculative at this point, but is Walker the guy who's the senator of John Doe? Are we looking at maybe Rince Priebus or someone higher that's the senator of John Doe and Walker's just getting pulled down in it?
Well, I mean, that's something that remains to be seen. But one thing I do want to just clarify is that a lot of people are saying, who is John Doe? And the John Doe investigation doesn't actually refer to a person. It's just the type of investigation. But definitely, I would think this seems like it's drawing closer and closer to Scott Walker and, you know, possibly higher up. I mean, you can see with Scott Walker's culture that's been instituted with this, you know, his Republican Party, it's very much a top-down culture. So, you know, if the bad behavior starts at the top, it's flowing to the bottom. There's no way of knowing how high this has gone until we see potentially more charges come out in the next days and weeks.
Until it plays out, because I know some of them that just got charged did, I believe it was Wink, and I don't know about Ryan's, I can't think of her last name, Ryan Fleisch, I should know that. But I know Wink basically said she's taken a plea bargain and she's going to be working with the prosecutor. So it'll be interesting to see what does come out in the next month, several months, as they kind of get more information on this. Now,
yes.
The DPW launched a new website. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I'd love to. We launched a new website. It's called walkerinvestigation.com. And what we're doing is we're inviting Wisconsinites to come and investigate Scott Walker's criminal network so they can see the kind of activity that was happening pretty much right under Scott Walker's nose. They can look at the map showing, you know, where the secret email network was and how close it was to his office. And they can read the criminal complaints about all these bad acts that happen by his close advisors, you know, whether it's the theft of more than $60,000 intended for the families of military service members killed in action. I mean, the secret email network, illegal campaign contributions, there's a lot of really bad acts that have occurred under Scott Walker's watch, and people can read all about them.
And it goes back to him also being county executive of Milwaukee, correct?
Yes.
It goes all the way back to that, which is just to let people know that the John Doe investigation started with him in Milwaukee. And it was with him campaigning on county time and some of the other things. And the offices we're talking about are the offices that were in Milwaukee County. So we're going all the way back. So that's where we're starting at. And then it moves forward. And I'm going to guess that since these people were around him in the government, that as a governor, that it had just continued.
Right. And see, and also, too, you know, some of these people have continued with him to Madison. You know, he brought them to the governor's office, and he has Kelly Reinfleisch, who has been charged with some of the most serious crimes, you know, the four felonies for misconduct in public office. You know, the Republicans are very quick to characterize her as a former employee, but what they're not mentioning is that up until really just days before she was arrested, she was a fundraiser for Walker's recall campaign. So she's been in his inner circle, not just in Milwaukee County, but he's brought her to Madison with him, and same with some of these other folks too.
Now I have a couple questions, last couple questions actually. The first one is, do you feel that there's a media bias in favor of Walker and Fitzgerald? I'll just put Fitzgeralds together. I usually call them Fitzwalkers because they're all basically the same person, because there doesn't seem to be a deeper investigation from the mainstream media.
I think so. And I think there's a couple, you know, a couple people out there who have really gotten this right. But I think it's been all along, there's been a very quick push to characterize it as just, you know, Darlene Wink was posting a couple pro-Walker comments on blogs, and that's all it was. And I think now it's just gotten to a point where there are so many charges against so many people so close to Walker that it really is something that has to be discussed all the time. It is. There's never been a criminal corruption probe into a sitting governor in Wisconsin. I mean, this is unprecedented. This is not something we've had happen in Wisconsin, and it should be talked about. It should be talked about all the time, and it should raise very, very serious questions about Scott Walker's judgment. So I think that people need to be talking about this. The media needs to be telling this story. And if they're not, that's why, you know, that's why we have this new website, walkerinvestigation.com, so people can put the facts together and connect the dots themselves.
And I have one question out of the chat room. I don't know if you can answer it. I'm going to ask it, and I'll let you see what you can do with it. John Castor says that Charlie Sykes is also mentioned at the end of the Darlene Wink indictment. Any chance he can be indicted or called as a witness? Can you even talk about that at all, or is that something for maybe a lawyer to kind of discuss?
That's not something I know about, but I would just say, you know, just generally, you know, nobody wants to be mentioned in a criminal complaints about corruption and misuse of public office and illegal campaign contributions. You know, their charges of child sex enticement. I mean, I don't know anyone that wants their name mentioned in that. So, you know, that's something for lawyers to discuss, but I know I wouldn't want my name in one of those.
Well, that's true. And it just feeds into the mainstream media not delving deeper into this investigation.
Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks too to how broad this is in Scott Walker's Republican Party, that this is just has spread, you know, it's got all these tentacles into every area of his party. So they're kind of, it's kind of, they're all tied together.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for being on today. The new website is walkerinvestigation.com. And hopefully, sorry to cut you off, we got to get going, but hopefully you can come on again and we can talk more about what's going on. I'd like to do like a weekly segment on this so people keep up with what's going on and know what's going on, because it's just not being talked about. Like you said, we really need this to go out, and people need to know what's really going on with this.
Well, great. Thank you for having me on. I'd definitely love to come back on. And just one quick thing before we go, on our website, walkerinvestigation.com, we do have a new web ad that you can watch too there called What Walker Knew, and it highlights a lot of the media coverage from the John Doe. So it's a great video.
All right. And that's on walkerinvestigation.com.
Yes, it is. It's right on the website.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Melissa. Have a great day now.
Thank you, too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. That was Melissa Baldoff with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin talking about the John Doe investigation. We will be right back with Sam Liebert.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. It's not a great time to go to Greece on some long-dreamed-of vacation. At least I want to try it this weekend. The whole country's going to shut down, with huge strikes planned for Friday and Saturday. The people of Greece, home of democracy, are now being treated like third-world peasants. And some of the lords are exactly the same, like the IMF, and they're demanding the same tried-and-failed policies that have ruined the livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people the world over. The IMF, the European Community, and the European Central Bank are demanding that the Greek people accept massive public sector layoffs and private sector pay cuts in return for a big loan that'll allow them to stay within the Eurozone. But Greek trade unionists and much of Greek civil society have rightly come to the conclusion that the cost of staying with the euro isn't worth the candle. The IMF and Germany especially have been insisting on dictating the harshest and most counterproductive terms, and Greece's leaders have bowed to them. But the people aren't bowing. They're standing up. They know what democracy is supposed to look like, and this ain't it. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz, and on now is Sam Liebert. He is a candidate for the 44th Assembly seat. Welcome, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I'm going to start off with the one question that everyone usually asks. Why did you decide to run for office?
The main reason I decided to run for office is because right now the district I live in, the 44th Assembly District, which is essentially the entire city of Janesville, really hasn't had representation since January of 2011. And the main reason I jumped in the race was the entire recall election, which I did some volunteer work, not as much as some people did, but the fact that 25,000-plus people went out every day in the cold, the rain, the snow, holidays over Christmas, New Year's, Hanukkah, what have you, people gave up a lot of time. And I feel that a lot of these people and I share the same values. A lot of us are disgusted and angry with the policy of our rubber stamp assembly member, along with Governor Walker and his policies. And I'm hoping I can kind of take some of that voice, some of that anger, some of that frustration, but also I think some of that that hope and that we can turn things around at the state level. And I'm one of four Democrats in the race right now, and hoping I can take that message to the voters come August 14th.
Well, what sets you apart from the other three that you're running against?
I've been a political grassroots activist for 8 years, and so I think that's what really sets me apart. I really know how to campaign at the grassroots level, and that's pretty much been my background almost the past decade, is either working for nonprofit or progressive candidates. Got my work as a volunteer for John Kerry in 2004, went on to work for Russ Feingold's Political Action Committee in 2006, where I ended up going to Ohio to work for Senator Sherrod Brown, who's a strong progressive in the U.S. Senate, and is up for election this year, and the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of the right wings are already going after him. I worked on the president's campaign for 21 months, starting all the way back in Iowa, and also ended up working for his administration for 13 months in Washington, D.C. as the deputy White House liaison to the USDA. So I have a vast portfolio of experience, political experience, but also activism. I've also been in elected office the least amount of time. I've been on Janesville City Council for less than a year, but I've been there long enough to know that things need to change in Madison. One of my issues I'm talking about is restoring a lot of local control back to the municipalities, because this past year, the Republicans always talk small governments and we love local control, yet Scott Walker, Joan Islands, the representative here, have continued to take more and more power away from the municipalities and really putting more burden on us to make up for their cuts and austerity measures that they think are, the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, that was his tools. It makes him look like a good guy. We gave him the tools. I don't know why they cut all the jobs.
Well, they say they gave us tools, but I feel like they've given us a sledgehammer to clean a glass window, and that's not the right tool to use. So these tools have forced a lot of communities to increase fees, to find, here in Janesville, unfortunately, we had to pass a wheel tax to raise funds of over $500,000 to balance our budget for 2012. And so a lot of communities are finding themselves either having to cut vital services, which are important, whether it's police, fire, road plowing, or raise rates. And unfortunately, a lot of cities have to make those hard decisions where the state has kind of washed their hands of the issue and made the public, the county supervisors, the city council members, the aldermen, the mayors, the enemy instead of the actual enemy, which is the Republican majority in the assembly right now.
What is the main issue that, you just talked about one. What's your second main issue that you're running on? I mean, what's the thing that you see in Janesville? You're like, geez, there's not much I can do as a city councilman, but if I were in Madison, I could really make a difference here.
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to accountability and independence of a representative. Joe Nyland is sitting on about $33,000 right now. A lot of those are $500 donations from people who are in a lot of the large industries who have benefited from Scott Walker's budget and tax giveaways to big corporations. And I think accountability and independence is what we're looking for. I've been looking at Joe's record, and I can't find anywhere where he has deviated from the Republican majority, not even once. I mean, even the former representative and speaker of the assembly, Mike Sheridan from this district, from time to time, veered, away from the Democratic majority because he thought, that's not right. I want to vote a different way. And whether I agreed or disagreed with that, we need to have someone who's independent and who isn't just going to vote yes, yes, yes to whatever Scott Walker and the Koch brothers and these kind of one percenters have in mind for our state and for our country. I'm actually made a commitment to myself to limit how much money I'll be raising. The state limit is $500 per individual. I've limited myself to accepting only $250 per individual. I think the Citizens United decision was awful, was terrible. And I think just having too much money, I don't want this assembly seat to be for sale. I want it to be back on the election block and have the have the voters decide who their elected officials are and not 5 or 10 really rich people who just happen to be able to give Mr. Nyland a lot of money and allow him to buy more airtime or more mailing than the other person.
So basically the fact that your representative is a rubber stamp is basically doing you no good in Janesville, and that you getting in there would be able to change that and make some positive change by not voting in lockstep but try to vote for things that would benefit Janesville.
Exactly. I mean, it's the fact that, we've had General Motors here for almost 100 years, and I'm not blaming Scott Walker or Joe Nylands. That was before their time. But the fact that this industrial powerhouse essentially has no influence at all within the government, the state government, or even the federal government. Paul Ryan doesn't represent us at all. The middle class, the blue-collar people who work paycheck to paycheck every week. I think it's about getting someone in there who has lived that life, that middle-class, hardworking background. And I don't think Joe appreciates where he come from or how he got there. And so hopefully this November we can change that.
Well, what's the first bill that you would put in? Because obviously you're talking about economics. You're obviously saying that you guys, and I know Janesville have been really hard hit in it, because I'm in the first CD, and so I keep up with what's going on within that. And you guys been hit pretty good with with a lot of the closures. Would your first bill then be on economic to try to improve your economic system, and how would you do that?
Economics is number one. Obviously, Rock County still, I think, has some of the highest unemployment, maybe next to Milwaukee County in the state. And something I'd like to do is Rock County, Janesville, the Boyd area are really starting to turn away, but we're starting to transition from that industrial blue-collar working class to some more of the upper higher-tech medical industry. North Star Medical is moving into Boyd within the next few years. Janesville City Council is making a decision soon. Shine Medical, which is a nuclear medical isotope creator that we're hoping to have here on the south side of the city, that would bring 125-plus high-paying jobs. And so I think as we see ourselves moving into that medical arena on the national and the state level, I'd love to see, I think it's in Milwaukee, they're looking to extend their nursing college, and I think Janesville is on the top five of that list. And so I'd love to see some incentives or some way to bring that nursing college, that nursing school to this area. We have a brand new multi-million dollar hospital that just went in. St. Mary's Dean just moved here, created 350 new jobs practically overnight. And I think that's kind of the future. And so I'd like to attract more medical jobs, medical industry related jobs to the area. And I think by education, working with our technical colleges, bringing in more nursing teachers and opening that nursing college, I think Janesville has a bright future in Wisconsin as being a medical leader.
So you basically put in a bill then that would allow these more technical things to come in. Walker, I believe, has not been that supportive of technical medical and technology, and so you would be trying to push a bill in that's something like that that would assist in Janesville then?
Yeah, exactly, Sarah. Walker hasn't been a friend of any sort of education unless you're a private voucher school. He hasn't been a friend of the university system, certainly not the technical college system. A lot of those technical schools have had to, again, raise tuition, raise fees. If their advisory board, they have to raise taxes, tax levy to make ends meet because this legislature, Scott Walker, Joe Nylund, just aren't making the investments that are needed to be competitive in the country, let alone in the state.
How would you assist with the education? How would you help out? We've got a huge student loan issue going on. We have the hiking of tuition because of the cuts Walker has done to the education system. And you have a lot more people relying on these loans because the grants have been cut too. So if education is something that you're really focusing on, how would you be able to help those students who want to get in?
Well, I think President Obama did a great first step at the federal level where he really, what he did was cut out the middleman with loans. A lot of these students, I'm one of them, I'm still in college, I'm a continuing student. A lot of these students, a lot of their money goes towards just paying down the interest. And when they get out of college, if they're just making that minimum payment, they're really just paying off the interest and then maybe a little bit of the actual loan. And so I think that was a great first step. I think it's similar to the housing industry. I think we need to encourage the lending industry to step up to the plate and make these investments in people because, if we can get lower interest loans, either through private banks or possibly more grant money, more loans through the state, I think by working with these banks, working with the state, making an investment in people, you can say, look, you make the investment now, but these people are going to come back to you when they need house loans, when they need a mortgage, when they want to buy a car to start a family. And I think in the long run, I think it works out for everyone because you're making an investment in their future now so that they get their two-year degree, their four-year degree, their master's, what have you, and then they're going to be coming back to this industry again to start up their life, whether it's, a home or a car. So I think we should be encouraging the industry to start lending more. We have high tuition rates. The last semester I went to school, I think I paid $800 just for my books. Thought I was going to have a stroke. But I think a lot of this, too, is putting controls on the schools, on the universities. Obama said something in his, the president said something pretty controversial, I thought, in the State of the Union speech where he said, look, hey, colleges, if you don't put caps or put controls on your tuition hiking, you know, you could be looking at a cut possibly in aid. I'm not sure if I agree with that 100%, but I definitely think it's a conversation worth exploring. And just like anything else, whether it was the housing bubble, you know, there's kind of seems like there's this wild out of control hike every year, whether it's private or public universities. And I definitely think something needs to be done to kind of pull in the reins on this and make college affordable again, because essentially the only way you can go to college now is if you're extremely poor and you qualify for a lot of grants and low interest loans, or if you're extremely rich and the middle class is kind of stuck in that gray area where they have to pay for all of it up front, maybe a little bit of help with loans or grants, but essentially it's paid for all out of pocket. And I think we need to refocus and level the playing field again for students, whether you're lower, middle, or upper class.
What's the website people can go to get more information from you?
Yeah, my website is electsamliebert.com, and my last name is L-I-E-B-E-R-T. And folks can learn about my biography, where I stand on issues. It's an always evolving website. Every week I'm hoping to do one blog post on an issue or topic that's relative and current at the moment. And people can join our Facebook group, sign up for a mailing list to get updates, and follow the campaign.
Okay. Well, good luck with the campaign, and thank you so much for being on today, Sam.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and thanks for what you do.
Well, thank you. And you have a good day, and we'll find out what happens after your primary.
Thanks so much. Take care.
You're welcome. You too. Bye. That was Sam Liebert. He is running for 44th Assembly District. And he's obviously going to have a primary coming up, and we'll kind of follow and see what's going on there. Up next is Julie Wells. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Hi, this is Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse. You can find us on iTunes. This week, the Obama administration has mandated that all employers, including certain religious institutions such as hospitals and universities, must provide contraception with the new health care package. It's interesting how quickly the Republican Party ran to the aid of religious institutions. Rick Santorum says that we're taking faith and crushing it. He then equated it to the French Revolution, stating that the government is taking away God-given rights. The Republicans were singing a slightly different tune late last week when they attacked Barack Obama for quoting the Bible while giving a speech on tax reform and the now infamous Buffett rule. President Obama spoke of Jesus' teachings, quoting Luke chapter 12, verse 48, "For unto whom much is given, much shall be required." On Fox and Friends, Steven Crowder took this chance to slam Obama as someone who doesn't go to church and uses religion for political gain. Crowder stated, "This guy should go back to burning the taxpayer-funded incense to whatever pagan foreign deity he's worshiping, because it's not Jesus." Once again, the Republican Party has taken it upon themselves to prove to the masses that they will say whatever it takes in order to belittle our president, so that they can convince as many people from the 99% to vote for them as possible. Also, that they can continue to push legislation that limits our social freedoms, destroys our environment, and creates economic unrest, all to the benefit of the most well-to-do in our society. I'm Eric Brandt. That's just something to think about.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and on now is Julie Wells, who's going to be talking about the harnessing the recall, because we've got a lot of people who are still, they're kind of going through recall withdrawal. They've got all this energy and not sure what to do with it. She also went to Wellstone, and that is going to lead us to her candidacy. But before we get there, I'd like to welcome Julie Wells to the show. Hello, Julie.
Hi, Sarah. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
A little early for me, I guess. Got to get my coffee.
that's kind of funny you said that, because that's just what I was doing during the break, too. I ran and had to refill my coffee cup as well. So It's good. We're both coffeed up, ready to go. Now,
some days it seems like the caffeine is the only thing I'm going on.
Usually I don't have caffeine, and most people ask me why, and I just look at them and go, really? You really need to see me on caffeine? And they look at me for a second and go, oh, yeah, no. But today was one of those early morning days, and I just couldn't wake up, so I have just a little bit of caffeine in here. So it's really starting to kick in now, so I'll try to keep myself under control for the rest of the show.
Yeah, you talk quite a bit. I'll bet on caffeine you start talking in circles.
And really fast, so no one can understand me. Not a good combination, really. Now, the recall, it was amazing. People had all this energy. They were going out. People were going out 6-7 hours a day, some people every day, out in the cold. When it got done, I saw that people went, now what? Now what? What do we do now? And it's trying to harness that. How do you think that we can harness that kind of energy? Where do you think we need to put it?
Well, you did put it right in the intro when you said that we've got recall withdrawal. Our group has started calling ourselves recallaholics because after we turned in those signatures, it was just like, now what? What can we do? Oh, my gosh, I woke up and I have nothing to do today. I've got to do something because that whole recall 60-day thing was just go, 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 go. So, yeah, we do want to harness that motivation. People are still just screaming for something to do. And so we're trying to keep our volunteer base here in Jefferson County together in one group. And right now we're looking at working on Get Out the Vote and voter ID. We're going through special registration, deputizing, training sessions in all the municipalities so we can go out and register people that haven't been registered to vote. And we will also be trying to set up some way of getting people rides to the DMV to get their voter ID cards, because that's going to be huge in the upcoming elections.
Do you think that getting out the vote is doubling your efforts? There's so many groups that are working on that. Do you think that just seems to be where people are just focused at, and that's why everyone's doing that?
Yeah, I think that is logically the next step for everybody. We're also helping out with different campaigns. Here in Jefferson County, we have, I believe it's like 12 candidates that are running for office. And all of these, you know, it's mostly county board and some school board members. And most of these people are first-timers and really do need the help on their campaigns, never done it before, me included. So any help that we can get, our volunteers are there willing to help out. We're also huge helping Lori Compass in the Senator Fitzgerald recall. We've been scrubbing the database looking for misspelled names and, you know, comparing them to the petitions and making sure all the information has been entered right. And so right now she's sitting with Fitzgerald filed his challenges yesterday, and so she's got 5 days to rebut those. So that's really huge right now in the next 5 days. Everybody's mobilized in that effort.
And the interesting thing about that one is that he came up with, what, 250 signatures that he's rebutting and one fraud signature after he was spewing all this stuff about fraud, fraud, fraud. That's the best he has?
Yeah, and I don't even know why it's an issue, because even if all of those, even if he's right on every single one of those, it's not enough to avoid the recall. She's still got way more signatures than needed. But, yeah, even yesterday he was still spouting 3,000 names were invalid. But then when they turned them in, it was, what, 250 that he's challenging and only one invalid name?
Yeah.
It's just his modus operandi. He lies every time he opens his mouth. He's just like Walker.
Well, that's why I call him Fitz Walker. He also, if he doesn't lie, then he signs a thing saying he can't talk about it.
Yeah, although I believe that Scott Fitzgerald is the only one that did not sign the disclosure or whatever that agreement was about not talking about it. And I wonder why. Why is he the only one that wasn't required to sign that?
Because it was his staff that was doing it, maybe?
Probably. That's what I'm thinking, is because he headed it up.
It was his office staff. It was. My understanding is that it was Jeff Fitzgerald, Scott Fitzgerald, and their staffers. And it was the staffers I think doesn't his staffer make $79,000 and actually works for the law firm that wrote it up and then was at the law firm while writing it up.
Isn't that
but
something?
He's getting paid by the state through Fitzwalker's office. It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's all you could say.
Retired teachers going back part-time or double dippers.
Right, yeah. Heaven forbid
like
those people.
Of
heaven forbid those people with the petition, you know, the teachers have to find another level of income or your state workers that make a little less money have to find a second income. But, hey, I can pay my staff for $79,000 to work at a law firm, and I can take out $18,000 per diem on the state.
Yeah. Yeah, he lives so close. I haven't looked at that per diem law myself personally, but it just seems that he lives so close to the Capitol that he should be within that, there's like a mile radius that you're included in, and he just seems so close that I don't even know if he should be included in being eligible for that per diem.
You would think that he could get his butt home. You know,
yeah.
You would think that. Unless it was an over, I can understand they've had some overnights, and I know he only works once or twice a month. I'm sorry, once or twice a month, because apparently he's too busy on the recall to work. Although he did say they were too busy working, or for the recall. I don't know. However, he's putting it, it's exactly opposite of what it was. His brother apparently is too busy running for higher office to work, so they only work a couple times a month. But you would think unless it's an overnight, he can scurry home. It's not that far. Other people do it.
Yeah, and there were some late night things, you know, because Scott Walker did run in his campaign about not introducing legislation late at night, you know, because nothing good happens late at night is what he had said. And mm-hmm. then a lot of his backdoor dealing legislation stuff was introduced at midnight or 2 in the morning. So,
Yes. Now, do
don't
you
get
know?
Me going.
I've already started. I'm sorry. Good thing the coffee hasn't kicked in, huh?
Yeah.
Do you know if the press has made the correlation between the fact that he's saying, "Oh, there's 3,000 signatures," and that he only turned in for 250?
No, I don't think so, and I really don't look for it. I don't put a lot of confidence, I guess, in our press. They don't do any investigative journalism. It looks to be mostly cut and paste. You know, the articles that we're getting in our state papers and stuff are coming from press releases that they just copy word for word and don't ever even question. So no, I don't see it forthcoming that they will start questioning those signatures and what's really going on. You find a lot more information on the internet.
What about your local paper?
My local paper is pretty right-leaning. So they've had a lot of large articles about the stand with Scott Walker. I think they call them Walker Walkers. They're actually making a video about walking around with signs and supporting Governor Walker, and it's just stomach-turning, splashed all over the front page. And I believe that even the editor had reprimanded one of the reporters for signing the recall papers.
And he did it as a private citizen, didn't he? Or she?
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't do it while he was working, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, he had every right to sign his name on that recall petition. And nobody should be reprimanded at their job for having signed a petition. That's their right to do it. Doesn't matter where you work.
It's free speech, but according to a lot of the neocons, free speech equals money. So apparently if he threw a bunch of money at it, he would be okay.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You're so right.
So you went to Wellstone. Can you tell people what Wellstone is?
Camp Wellstone is a training, and it's over the course of 3 days. It was a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it was absolutely jam-packed. I'm still trying to absorb a lot of the stuff that they taught us. But they do three different tracks. They have an activist track, a campaign track, and a candidate track. And you choose whichever one you want to learn about. And this was put together by Paul Wellstone, who was the congressman from Minnesota. He was killed in a plane crash many years ago, but it's a progressive training, and it's well worth going to. I was in the candidate track and also learned about campaign, how to put a campaign together, how to do a timeline and plan, when to do your fundraising and when to get your mailing out and, you know, contact with people. They did practice sessions, you know, where we did role play, knocking on doors and asking for funds or asking for votes and how to talk to people. And it was just a really awesome training session. I would definitely go back. It's one of those things where you could go to it time and time again and still learn something.
So it's well worth it. And you had a lot of people there, too. It was a lot of the recall people were there as well, weren't they?
Yeah, I think there were actually 20 or 25 of us from this area that went to the training, which was absolutely incredible.
That's awesome. We are speaking with Julie Wells, and she was talking about the recall. I'm going to ask her about her candidacy in a moment, but you're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz, do you have any questions for candidate Wells? The phone number is 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. Now, you are a candidate for the Jefferson County Board.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to start off asking you the same question I asked Sam earlier. Why did you decide to run for office?
Well, a lot of it had to do with the recall starting up. Really woke me up politically. And I just decided that I was tired of being one of those people who sat on the couch and said, they need to do something about that, or they need to do this, or they need to do that. And I decided that I should be one of the they's that I was talking about. Why not? I have a good head on my shoulders. I've got wonderful critical thinking skills. I have a lot of life experience, and I have a passion for this town that I live in. Been here all my life. So I'd like to be one of the people that helps to move it forward and prepares it for the future.
And how many people are you running against right now?
I've got just one in my district. He is the incumbent. He's been on the county board for several years, and he's a much older gentleman, and I think it's time for just some fresh ideas.
Okay, so you're not going to have a primary then. Your election is April 14th, 21st?
April 3rd.
Yeah. One of these days, eventually I would have gone through the calendar and figured it out.
Yeah, you would have hit it.
Yeah, just, you know, it would have taken me another 5 minutes, but it's okay.
But yeah, well, April 3rd, and there is no primary for me.
Okay. What is the most important, and I can't think of the word right now, but what's the most important thing that you think needs to change in Jefferson County on the board?
I think that our board has really gotten to be pretty stagnant. I think that our board members are, almost all of them, are long-term board members and are just kind of, it's kind of gotten to be the good old boys club. And I think we need some people that are really willing to take a hard look at our future and see where our county is headed. And we need to be investing right now so that we're standing good when this economy starts recovering well. In my district, we have a lot of businesses that are now standing empty, a lot of stores that have gone out of business, many, many empty buildings, and I'd like to try to bring some business back in here, which would help pump up the economy in the Fort Atkinson area.
How would you bring the businesses back in?
That's a good question. I don't have a solid plan, I guess. I'd have to get on the commission. You know, there's different committees. Once you're on the county board, you get assigned to different committees. And I would have to get on a committee. I'd have a lot of learning to do, and I'm looking forward to that. I love to learn, and I learn quick. I'm a fast study. And I would start looking around at how other communities have brought businesses in. I know that other board members are working on that and have good ideas. But I think that basically the way that businesses look at where they're going to locate, they look at the community. You know, they're not, they don't want to come into a community that's run down and shabby and infrastructure's falling apart. They look at, you know, good schools. Are there good schools for their employees? Is there, you know, good infrastructure for them moving their product to market or bringing in raw materials to make their products? And all that stuff goes hand in hand. So it's a long, drawn-out process.
And you're obviously, all the terms are 2 years, correct?
Yes.
So this is something you're looking at more long-term than just a year or two. You're looking at 3-4 years down the road.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's not a firm flash-in-the-pan kind of thing, you know, do 1-2-year thing and I'm gone. No, it would be I'm making an investment in our future, and so I'd be there for the long haul.
A lot of people who are running and have run, they say that the people they're running against, or the reason why they're running, is that they're tired of the rubber stamping going on, especially in county. There's a lot of everyone voting for, and there's not a lot of people standing up and saying, no, that's wrong. Would you have any problem standing up and saying, no, that's wrong?
No, absolutely not. I get in trouble a lot at my house because I'm the one who will stand up and say, no, I don't agree with that. And usually I have some very good arguments for who's ever talking.
Do you have a website that people can go to get more information on your campaign?
Yes. In fact, it's in the works right now. It's not actually up and running today, but I've been promised that on Monday it will be online, so I'll give you the web address and everybody can write it down, and please on Monday check it out. It's
www.julieawells.com.
www.julieawells.com.
Okay. Yes. And that will be up, you said, on Monday?
Yep, that's what I've been promised, so I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that's true. But yeah, on my website there's places where it gives contact information, and I would love to hear from the people in my community with their concerns and their ideas about the county board. So, you know, please check out the website and contact me.
Okay. Well, Julie, thank you so much for being on the show today. Good luck on your campaign, and I'm sure we'll have you on again, maybe before your election, but definitely afterwards, and you can let us know how it went.
Okay. Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day. That was Julie Wells. She is running for the Jefferson County Board. The other person is running for the other seat. So if you have any questions, you can go to www.julieawells.com, and she said they'll be up on Monday. Well, I'd like to thank you for listening to the Sarah Schultz Show today. I'd like to thank my producer, Bill, for his work on the show this week. You can download the show from iTunes or listen to the archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz. You can also listen to the Sarah Schultz Show, that's easy to say, right, off of the Sarah Schultz Show app for Android phones and iPhones. It's a free download. Go on, download it. You can hear all the archive shows. You tune in on Saturday at 6 p.m. to WIDE 99.1 LPFM in Madison, on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. to WHYS 96.3 LPFM in Eau Claire, and on Sundays to WFAQ 92.9 LPFM in Mukwonga, Waukesha. Remember, Wisconsin forward, together forward. Have a great week, everyone. We'll catch you next Friday.